Chapter 14. Neathal barely waited until her GAG security escort was out of the conference room and the door shut behind them before getting to the point. She did not even bother to sit.
Sadris Koyan, Corellia's Five Worlds Prime Minister, is talking to us about changing sides.
Really? Kaidas sat and leaned back in his chair. Just betraying the rest of the Confederation and risking retaliation.
My analysts suspect that the boost of hope he might have received when the Hapens withdrew from the war was lost when they isolated themselves from the Confederation again, and that he would much prefer to be on the winning side.
She offered a good simulation of a human shrug.
It's not inappropriate for his psychological profile.
Koyan had been chief of state of the Corellian world of Trollis, but had been elected by a majority, though not unanimous, vote of the other chiefs of state when Durgedjan had been assassinated. A member of the aggressive Centerpoint party, he had probably been seen by the other chiefs as the lesser of several evils in the succession scramble that followed Gedjan's death. What are they offering?
They want to negotiate with you. You, specifically. We designate a point in space. Any point. Equidistant between Corellia and Coruscant. The two sides bring an equal number of vessels in equivalent class ratings. You and their negotiator can negotiate either face-to-face or ship-to-ship through tight-beam transmission.
Who is their negotiator?
I do not know.
Not Koyan? Neathal shook her head.
His profile suggests a distinct aversion to being in the company of dangerous people. This is clearly how he has survived so long.
I don't like it. No longer even pretending to be at ease, Kaidas leaned forward. Even if they give us the opportunity to choose the spot for the meeting, they can communicate that information to a secondary force.
As can we.
Which can then jump to that site and attack.
As can we. They have no advantage.
Except in insisting that I be there. If their plan is intended to be an attempt on me, then success on their part, even if military losses are equivalent, disrupts our own coalition government and removes me as a strategic resource for the military. Neathal cocked her head, a gesture of curiosity.
You are unusually cautious today. Learning from Koyan himself.
Kaidas opened his mouth to hurl back a retaliatory remark, then closed it again. Neathal was right. He was more cautious. Not because of possible danger to himself, but because of danger to Alana. He was not going to let her be more than a few paces from him until the war was resolved. Taking her into the vicinity of what might be a trap was the last thing he wanted to do. On the other hand, Neathal could not be allowed to learn that Kaidas's behavior was changing because of concern for the child. So far as she knew, Alana was a hostage, leverage against the Hapen Queen Mother. For Neathal to suspect that Kaidas's feelings were more personal, more heartfelt, could endanger both of them if Neathal ever turned against him. Kaidas relented, shrugging. Fine. I'll do it. Do you mind if I make an effort not to get killed when this turns out to be a trap?
Do what you need to.
I'll have units of the Second Fleet standing by to jump to the talk site, to deal with whatever forces Koyan decides to bring in.
As you wish. I'll calm the Corellians with an acceptance.
Caius nodded, a gesture of agreement that he meant as one of dismissal as well. Whether she understood that or not, Neafel paused for a moment, looking at him, before turning and leaving. Sanctuary Moon of Endor, Jedi Outpost. Through the transparasteel of the door separating the waiting room from the infirmary proper, Luke studied Master Katarn's face and listened to the words of Valin and Silgal. Katarn was unconscious, whether from drugs, pain, or voluntary immersion in a Jedi healing trance, Luke couldn't say. His face was flushed, sweating, and he looked as though he'd lost weight in the days he'd been on Coruscant. Silgal managed to impart considerable worry and sympathy into her gravelly Mon Cal voice.
The attack severed two ribs, penetrated his left lung, and exited through his left shoulder blade. A few centimeters off, and it would have gone clean through his heart. He has also contracted the Afflisiria bug, and some opportunistic infections. He is dehydrated and very weak, and traveling so far to get here could not have helped. Except that it was still a better choice than remaining in hiding on Coruscant.
I patched him up as well as I could, as soon as possible after he was injured. Valin sounded morose. But we had to drag him through about a kilometer of filthy pipes before we could do even that. Explosives we planted to seal our escape routes kicked dust into the air. Dust and germs. He shook his head, pained by his failure. Basic medical training isn't sufficient for a situation like that. Luke patted his shoulder. You did remarkably well. The fact that he's here alive is proof of that. And if anyone can heal him, it's Silgal. He finally turned away from studying Katarn to look at Valin. The young Jedi Knight was solemn, but not showing evidence of protracted stress or guilt. A good sign. Do you have a full report for me? Valin reached into his belt and removed a data card, which he handed to Luke.
I've flagged one or two points of interest on the report. You may want to pay special attention to them. A YVH combat droid that was programmed to get its cargo out of harm's way rather than help its master defend against four Jedi. Mob violence in response to the Afflisiria epidemic, against both state medical officials and people of Kaminori descent. Plus the fact that these reports were suppressed on the Holonews broadcast after they were first reported. Almost as though the GA government isn't whipping the population up into a frenzy about it.
Luke pocketed the card. I'll look for those details. He was distracted by a stirring in the force, the imminent arrival of others. There was no sense of menace associated with the presentiment, though. He glanced at the two Jedi. Anything else? But the answer came from behind Luke, accompanying a bustle of several moving bodies. Boots creaked, durable uniform cloth rubbed, equipment clattered, and a new voice rose above it all.
How about some news from Corellia?
Luke turned around to see a half-squadron of pilots headed his way. Wearing sweat-stained orange flight suits, their helmets under their arms, they had to have just come from their starfighters. In front, familiar and reassuring, was Wedge Antilles, sharp-featured and graying. Behind, a step to the right, was Wes Janson, his alert eyes and broad grin suggesting that he was taking copious mental notes now so that he could engage in a marathon of mockery later. Luke grinned and stepped forward to embrace his two friends. The other four pilots, two men and two women, he recognized as well.
Thanks for coming, Wedge. Good to see you, Wes.
What news from Corellia?
Wedge looked around, noting the presence of Jedi medics and workers in this hallway.
Maybe somewhere more private.
3 minutes later, a ground-level security door slid open before them, revealing shaded sunlight, as well as a pair of Ewoks in leather caps, stone-headed spears in hand, creeping their way a few meters beyond. As the door slid open, the Ewoks jabbered in surprise, turned, and fled back into the tree line 20 meters away. Wedge snorted.
Good neighbors, if you can stay out of their stewpots.
Come on.
Luke led him out into the fresh air, heavy with the scents of blooming flowers and forest decay. The door rumbled shut behind them.
How are Iella and the kids?
Iella's great. She's spending her time doing holonews analysis and passing her conclusions on to me, to Booster, to Talon Card. I'll have her add you to the distribution list if you like.
Please.
Luke gestured, and the two of them headed in a different direction from that taken by the fleeing Ewoks into the cover of deep forest.
I don't hear much from Sial, of course. We're certainly not estranged, but since she's serving with Alliance forces, still on the Blue Diver, and I'm an official enemy of the Alliance and an unofficial target of the Confederation, I don't get much news of her. Miri is still on the air adventure, gathering information to pass along to us, and making a fortune gambling.
He shook his head in mock distress.
She's going to be the first rich Antilles, and not from following an honest career. I don't know what to think of it. How's Ben?
Better than I have any right to expect.
They were deep enough in the trees to be out of hearing range of anyone at the outpost, though still close enough to see bits of it through the screen of hanging branches and vines.
So
Corellia. A good friend of mine, a Space Navy lifer with the Corellian Defense Force, he's 90, been retired for a few years, was just returned to active duty and assigned a recommissioned Carrick-class cruiser.
Luke offered Wedge a dubious expression.
A Carrick?
What's next? Are the Corellians going to start throwing cans of food at the Alliance fleets? Yes. It sounds like they're shoring up depleted units with increasing desperation. But there's more to it. My old friend is going to be part of a special diplomatic mission to talk to the GA. A hush-hush negotiation that General Fenner, Supreme Commander of the Confederation Military Forces, wasn't informed of beforehand. Scuttlebutt has it that when he inquired about it with the Corellians, they told him that it was just a delaying tactic, something to distract Colonel Solo for a few days. Now Fenner's people don't know if that's the truth, or if the Corellians are going to try to spring some sort of trap and kill Solo so they can claim the glory and have a bargaining advantage to give them even more influence within the Confederation. Or whether they're thinking of switching sides.
Luke frowned.
Where does the scuttlebutt come from in this case?
Wedge ticked numbers off on his fingers.
1, the granddaughter of my old friend. She got in touch with me by backdoor means to find out if there was any way I could talk her grandfather out of accepting the reactivation of his commission. 2, a pilot formerly under my command, now on Fenner's staff, querying me about what the Corellian Prime Minister is up to, since I'm obviously a neutral party. 3,
so it all amounts to this guy I know.
Wedge nodded.
The fate of galactic civilization might someday hang on an intelligence network consisting of this guy I know.
Thanks for scaring me.
Luke opened himself to the Force for a moment, but the future remained impossibly distant and unclear. All he could detect was the abundance of life around him, including the 2 Ewoks creeping in his direction. Their emotions consisted largely of curiosity and nervousness, rather than malice or hunger, so he concluded that attack was not on their minds.
If this guy I know could figure out where Jason is going to be and when,
It could prove very valuable to us. We have a means to track his movements, but that leaves us very reactive. He goes, and if we respond in time, we can follow him. To anticipate his movements would be ideal.
2 days until the meeting with the Corellians. 2 days, at a halfway point between Corellia and Coruscant. But that's still a lot of space to cover.
Wedge frowned, calculating.
In 2 days, if you could have a Stealth X shadow the Anakin Solo out of the Coruscant system, that might give us the exact coordinates. Her course, plus knowledge that the destination will be identical in distance from there to Corellia as well.
Right. If we're lucky and he doesn't send the Anakin Solo through an elaborate multiple-leg course.
I doubt he will. Whether it is one or not, he has to suspect that it's a trap. Why worry about elaborate routing when you're going directly to the adversary anyway?
True. Luke nodded. I'll send out a Stealth X immediately. He turned back toward the outpost and led them in that direction. Wedge, it's good to have you here.
Speaking of which,
no, you're not being paid. Wedge laughed.
Just like the Rebellion days. No, I was going to say you've brought me in for military advice. You're acquiring personnel and materiel. You have a base of operations and an agenda that involves interacting with 2 major galactic powers. Has it occurred to you that you're setting up a 3rd government here?
No.
Well, you are. The Jedi are now a cross-planetary self-governing body. And you're their chief of state. You might need to start thinking along those lines.
Huh. You want the job?
No. If it lands on me, I'll give it to Booster Terek. He'll figure out a way to get us paid.
Aboard the Anakin Solo. Titus relaxed in his command salon, away from the bustle and noise of the bridge, waiting for the exit from Coruscant space and the short hyperspace jump to the rendezvous point with the Corellian task force. He would have preferred to pass the time in 1 of 2 secret rooms near his quarters, Alana's playroom or his cramped workshop, where finally he was finding the time to build his new lightsaber. It would be a proper lightsaber, with a red blade, the better to announce his new role as Lord of the Sith. Though when it would be time to make that declaration, he still did not know. The monitor before him, showing nothing but stars and tiny fast-moving dots that constituted traffic inbound toward Coruscant, suddenly switched to the face of Lieutenant Tebbutt. A dark-haired human woman, with a quiet, no-nonsense manner and an imposing air of efficiency, she had, like all officers aboard the Anakin Solo, survived the most intensive security vetting the guard could conduct. A candidate for promotion to the position of executive officer, she had, with Captain Neville's blessing, begun a program of mastering every bridge officer's duty. And today, she was at the communications officer's station. Kytus approved of both her ambition and her breadth of skills.
The pilot reports readiness for hyperspace jump, Tebbutt reported. But we're being hailed by a private yacht, identifying itself as Love Commander.
Kytus grimaced and briefly considered blowing the vehicle out of space. But no, Lando was only nearly useless, and the old gambler's instinct for self-preservation meant that he often had some helpful information at hand. Kytus pressed a button so that his next words would also go to Captain Neville.
All stop.
He released it and looked at the monitor again.
Put her captain through to me.
He waited just long enough for the picture on his display to change from Tebbutt's face before he began talking.
Calrissian, give me one good reason.
But the face that materialized on the display
was not that of Lando Calrissian. It was Leia Organa Solo. Mother. Leia gave him a slight smile. It seemed to Kytus to be a very sad one.
Oh, I'm not Mom anymore?
Not really, no. What do you need? I'm in a bit of a hurry.
I need to speak to you.
And without Father. Kytus frowned. Where is the Falcon?
Back on Kashyyyk, putting out fires. Fires you started.
Yes. Fires to punish an enemy of the Alliance. As I must point out, you are an enemy of the Alliance. Is there some reason I shouldn't start a fire in that ridiculous yacht of Lando's right now?
The same reason as before. I need to talk to you.
That's your need, not mine.
Leia simply stared at him. Silent. Implacable. She had to be up to something. Kytus tried to detect what he could of her through the Force. He could sense her, a bright and distinctive presence, alone on the yacht. Interesting. So Han wasn't with her. Nor were there any strangers present. No assassins who might be targeting him. No Hapens come to retrieve Alana. Well, he'd simply take her aboard, listen to what she had to say, and then throw her in prison, ending the danger she posed to his administration. Han would come after her, and Kytus would throw Han in prison too. Suddenly he felt cheered by his mother's unexpected visit. He sighed as if giving in.
Very well. Come aboard my personal hangar bay. You'll be escorted to the command salon.
Understood.